Welcome to the studio, Libby Hakaraya. Wait, Haka, yeah. What about your friend?
Tainui Stevens.
Yeah, Tainui.
I am Mr. Libby Hakaraya.
Yosta. No. Okay.
Right, my darling.
So you two came from Aotearoa, and how was your trip? Now, first to ask, do you have any jet lag?
Yes, it's a long trip, but New Zealand is a long way from anywhere. So
I know.
We're used to it.
And also, I can't complain because last year, Yorma made his way to New Zealand. And it was my job to remember to pick him up from the train station because he said, no, you do not have to pick me up from the train station. I will get my way to the train. Sorry, from Wellington, I'll get my way to the train station. I said, cool, well, I'll pick you up there. And I forgot. I forgot to pick up Yorma. So Yorma walked. He walked about 15 kilometres to Otaki, and he arrived at our film office, and I was so stunned to see a Sami standing in our film office. He looked like a backpacker.
Sweating.
It was hot. So I have to say that our trip has been nothing compared to
yours. And was it like Yorma just walked into it?
Looked like, yeah.
I came.
Yes, he did. Exactly.
Just like
exactly.
Just like that. Yeah.
And the look on my face was just, I said, that's a very long walk. And he said, not for a Sami. It was a stroll.
So, Libby, you are the head of the Maoriland Film Festival.
Mm.
And this has been now run for 3 years.
Correct, yes.
And you were one of the founders and starting the Maoriland Film Festival.
Yes, it was a team of us, actually, Tainui, myself. And interestingly enough, it came out of a short film that I directed, Tainui produced, that we made on our own in our own community where the film festival Maoriland is now held. I wrote a story about a group of men who ride lawnmowers as a job. Mm. And so one of the men, or the principal person who lent us all his lawnmowers and all his clothing for the actors to wear, was my cousin Pat and his wife Tanya. And they stood, literally watched us make this film, and they'd never been around film in their lives. They weren't really even film watchers. They wouldn't go to the movies. Mm. But after that film experience, and that film is showing at the film festival.
It is, yeah.
They said to us, we want to do this. We want to have a film festival. We want to help you. So really, it's a group.
And that was 2011.
That's right. And there's a group of five of us now that run that festival. And it's grown from us saying to our community of 6,000 people, come and watch movies from around the world, indigenous movies, to last year we had over 7,000 people. And this year, we're expecting a few more. So it's been...
How many, you said?
7,000.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and it just about killed us. So thank goodness Yorma walked. And it was fabulous. So this year, I mean, last year we had Sami films. In all three of our festivals, prior festivals, we've had Sami films. I remember the first time I met Sami at the Imaginative Film Festival in Canada, in Toronto. It must be 5, 6, 7 years ago. And I just had never met Sami before. So it was a joy to have people from your lands, from your nations, come to us. And we also had Suna as our festival peer last year. So she stayed with us for near on 6 weeks and helped us with our festival. So
Suna.
Yeah, Suna. Yeah, we feel very close. We can't actually speak much of your language yet, but we're working on it in the next few days.
Yeah, I know. Okay, so before I translate into Sami, so something like that.
Yeah, Taria taku moko maori ki ngā kiriata o te wā means, I mean, many people have seen the Maori moko, which is the face tattoo. And so what that phrase means is that we are tattooing the frame of the film with our Maori indigenous imagery. And I just want to go back to the film that Libby talked about, the Lawnmower Men of Kapu. What that short film did was unleash a festival, unleash the chance for our community to become film literate, to understand films, to celebrate indigenous stories from around the world, and really importantly, to encourage our young people to make their own films, to tell their own stories. And one of the beautiful things about coming to this other end of the world, 16,000 whatever kilometres away, is to see how similar we are. You guys live in snow, we live in sand. And your elders, our elders, our young people, our concerns for the environment, our concerns for justice, our concerns for health and cultural security, protecting our language and the customs of our old people. It's all the same. Whatever Indigenous culture we meet from around the planet, these are the same concerns. And so one of the expectations we have of coming to a festival like this is just to be able to celebrate. And in some ways, this is an act of survival, to be able to share our experiences, to be able to put them in our basket of knowledge to carry on the struggle for our survival.
So, now we're talking about Taika Waititi, that he can be here. So, how do you see now Libby and Tainui, the Maori films, that you have lots of wide variation of different kinds of settings? I haven't seen all of these films, but I'm going to be sitting and watching now the newest ones. We know that in Canada, Inuit films, they have a lot wide variety that has been progressing in the last years, and I see this kind of comparison to Maori, that it's in the same setting. You have like Speeding Up, and you have Maori TV, and you have your what's the system I forgot the word. I know because I've studied this in but the system that you have this control of the all the schools, the language system. Mm. What's the
Kohangareo?
Yes, yeah. Mm. So there's a big this difference compared to Sapmi, that the fundamental basis of where you have your this kind of we're talking about the rights, and we're talking about the language, and we're talking about all this stuff. But what do you think? What difference from that 2011 that film? What is really that thing that makes in New Zealand in Aotearoa the people make films? Mm.
It's as you say, it's a very big picture for us in New Zealand. I think the Māori voice in radio, television and film has been defined by our struggle for the language. So a lot of our stories have come because we're searching to regain our language, but we also have people who make stories in the mainstream and who have taken a Māori spirit, if you like, into the mainstream. Now, Taika Waititi, who's a wonderful filmmaker, is now doing a Hollywood blockbuster, Thor, and he's taking his Māori spirit into that blockbuster, and we went to the launch of the first day of the shoot in Australia a few months ago, and one of Taika's plans, and he insisted on this, was that there were a lot of Aboriginal interns working on the movie, and some of the crews didn't like that because they thought they were losing out on their jobs, and they were, but so what? And so we work both in the mainstream as well as our Māori world, if you like. So it is a big picture. We have films and stories, whether it's radio or TV, which may be small, which may be very culturally specific, as much as we have big stories, we have documentaries that may appeal to a wide audience. So it is a very, the variety of the stories that we're involved in is very impressive, it's very wide, but the security of it is based on our love for our language. And that's where it all starts.
Mm. And also, with all Indigenous people, as a matter of survival, we adapt. And we're lovers of technology. And I don't say that as I think that is a truism. And so we adopted radio as a progression of our oral storytelling. Of course, then, the radio made way for the television, the film has always been around as well. But as the technology becomes more accessible to our people, we are using that. And one of the things, we're using that to tell our stories. And as you say, it is an act of resistance. It's an act of sovereignty. And I think that what's really exciting is that in the last probably 15 years, we have seen more of our people gain strength in themselves to tell their story. I mean, in Ho Toa Mā, the documentary about the rise of Māori cinema that Tainui produced and
shown
I directed.
That's shown on Friday in the morning.
Yes, and some of those people that are in that documentary, including Taika and others, have really discovered their strength as a Māori filmmaker, not just as a filmmaker, because they are filmmakers, but to be able to say, I am a Māori filmmaker, is a political statement. And they're not afraid to say that anymore because they've been validated by the world. They've been validated by people here, for example, watching their films and understanding the story that they were telling. Whereas, you know, perhaps in a generation before that, and I know Tainui is one of our senior producers in film and television, we all had to kind of sort of toe a line because we couldn't get to the tools. We couldn't get to the actual tools to make these stories. Now we've got the tools in our hands. And I think one of the exciting things for us in our community, we had the first kohanga reo in the country in Aotearoa in Ōtaki. We then had the first Māori university, Te Whare Wānanga or Raukua. And we had no language. We had very few language speakers. Tainui came and did a story as a Māori reporter back in the day. What 85. Year was that? 85. And there were something like 30 speakers of the language, 30 speakers of te reo Māori in our community who were under the age of 40. That's all. Now we have thousands of reo Māori speakers. We have two immersion schools, full immersion Māori schools that go all the way from primary all the way to high school. We have two bilingual units. We have a Māori university. We have five kohanga reo Māori kindergartens. And so what that says to us as a survival of my own tribe, my own people, is that we're going to have thousands of kids who have no problem with the language, you know. What can they do with the language? How can they spread their story and their sovereignty and their knowledge? Film. And so we're going to have a virtual reality workshop at our Māori Land Film Festival, probably the first in the country, actually, that is going to be run by Aboriginal filmmakers for Māori kids to make VR films in 360. And I just can't wait to see how that lifts the lids on their heads, because I think for me that technology is how we will be able to tell the stories, how we see the world, because we don't see it as, you know, kind of a linear thing, because our stories connect us both forward and backwards, or backwards and forwards, I don't, you know, and all around us, because we're placed in our environment. So I think that's going to be a quantum shift for Indigenous storytelling.
And it's very much like in the old days when Europeans first came to New Zealand, our carvers used to carve with traditional stone implements, and then metal came in, and they rejoiced in the new technology of metal to take Māori carving to another stage of development. And so, as Libby says, you know, any of these Pākehā technologies are just tools to play with and to be able to experiment with. I just want to say too that while we make Māori films, stories, radio programs, one of the things that we're finding in New Zealand, a lot of non-Māori people want to work with us because they Pākehā. Appreciate the stories that we have to tell. And you know, our Pākehā or non-Māori people who do that, we consider them very much allies in the struggle. And they come and join us in a spirit of knowing their place, that they are our junior siblings. They don't come with any sense of superiority just because they are of the dominant culture. No, they come with a sense of humility. And another thing which I'm sure is very true in the Sami cultures as well is that we know how to run a team. It's a joint effort. It's not about the individual. It's about the team. And so whether we have Māori people or Pākehā people or the mixture working together, it's just the team. I mean, for example, with the film The Deadlands, it was a feature film, and every morning we would start with prayers. We would finish with prayers at the end of every shoot, every day, or if the actors were going into a dark space during the filming, we'd have more prayers. We did something like 600 or so prayers during the course of the shoot.
Māori prayers.
Māori prayers. And our Pākehā and people appreciate that as much as our Māori people need that. It all contributes to a sense of being together.
So the amount of understanding, you need that too. And that when you have that understanding, then you have a better cooperation, and then you have much more things that go... Both sides are wanting to go the same direction.
Yeah. It's partnership stuff, you know. It's collaboration, but again, the sovereignty, the story sovereignty, should, as far as we're concerned, lies with the Indigenous people. Like, I lost count, we all lost count of how many people said to us, and it's probably happened here, see, our stories, our treasure trove of stories are so rich, and you know, people are just skating on the surface, Moana, Frozen, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But same with, say, something like the Deadlands, the first action movie genre to be made in the Māori language, to be, you know, to be seen. The premiere was at Toronto International Film Festival, you know, that sort of thing. Groundbreaking stuff, but, you know, this idea that I can tell your story. You know, I'm a filmmaker. I can tell your story. What do you know about my stories? What do you know about my language? What do you know about my culture? I don't need to know any of that. I can tell your story because I've, you know, I've got the skills and I've got the ego.
Yeah.
Now, you know, put that stuff aside, and that's why you haven't told our stories. Mm. Put that, you know, that's the truth of it. I've lost count of how many people have said that to me, to my face. You know, I'm going to make the story about your great war chief.
Mm.
I said, well, good luck to that, because, I mean, I'm not going to make that story because I don't have the right to make it yet.
Yeah.
We earn that right.
Mm, exactly.
So those sorts of things are important. So I'm not afraid anymore that people are going to steal our stories.
Mm.
You know, I think the other thing is we have this collective Indigenous Native circle of filmmakers, and we will support each other to tell those stories.
I mean, one of the things that the Moana experience has shown is that Hollywood recognises that there has to be some sense of cultural authenticity. Otherwise, it's bad for business. And why do they think like that? It's because they are aware that Indigenous people themselves are proud and not prepared to put up with rubbish.
Yeah, not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. Not anymore. So we're in this for the long game. Yes, there may be arguments to be had about who owns Moana, the cultural sovereignty, the financial returns or whatever of a movie like that. These are ongoing debates. But we're in this for the long term. And whilst films like Moana get made, all I see is our people getting skills, getting more and more skills. We're growing the cachet, the critical mass.
Yeah, I tried to go to the shop in Imalo and bought the dress, but I couldn't find my size.
Well, you know, it's interesting because we're having our first rangatahi, our first youth, Māori Land Youth Film Festival, which is the first 2 days of our Māori Land Film Festival in March. And so we have a committee of young filmmakers, and they're all aged between 11 and 15, who are programming the festival. So they've watched films from around the world, and they are programming their festival for their peers. And when they came and said to us, well, we want to, for our free family screening, we want Moana. And I looked at these kids who are all full immersion Māori, full Māori speakers.
Mm.
Why do you want Moana? It's a Disney film. You know, because it was a challenge. I was challenging why they wanted this film, and they said, oh, no. You know, we want this film because it actually shows us.
Mm.
It shows us. And yes, we know it's a Disney film. There's no getting away from that.
Mm.
But that talks to us, and we want that film. And we want the Hawaiians to come and talk to us about what they thought about working on that film. And I thought, that's pretty cool. You know, our people aren't silly.
but you two have seen Moana.
Guess what? I have not seen Moana. No. I'm probably the last person.
I haven't seen that. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
So we basically are discussing about the film we haven't seen.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit more than that, because I think it's discussing not so much that, but how, you know, if things were appropriated from us in the past, and we had no control and no input, but with this film,
talk about Frozen. Yeah. We have seen Frozen.
Okay, let's talk about Frozen.
Yeah, well, but it is comparable. Exactly.
Yes, it is. Yeah. Yes, it is. So, yeah. It does.
And the Frozen is for the Sami, and Moana is for you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah. So and now when they're making a sequel of Frozen, then they finally came here. Maybe we should talk with the Sami.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling Yorma that it's still incredible to me that, you know, there are very smart people in the world making big movies like that, say, for example. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, but they still have the ego to sit in a room where they feel safe. But of course, in the world of everything being broadcast, this talk discussion was put on the internet recently, and it was five creatives of some of the biggest, like Aladdin, Frozen, and three other animation movies, and they talked about how, you know, did you go and talk to the native people of that particular, you know, who are the, you know, the custodians, or you know, that story belongs to that culture.
Yeah.
Oh no, we Googled that. And we found out we didn't need to go and see them, because we found it on Wikipedia. You know, there's still that kind of idea that somehow the Indigenous people that could help you, collaborate with you, perhaps don't exist. You know, perhaps they don't exist. Perhaps they're so invisible because our world is this world. You know, it's Hollywood or it's, you know, it's that kind of thing. So in a way, you know, I mean, I have not seen Moana because I want to see it on the big screen in my own community. But we had a lot to do with the Hawaiian community liaison person going back a year. She contacted us to see who she could talk to in our community to run some ideas past them. She's native Hawaiian and working for Disney. And, of course, Taika had a hand in writing the first pass on that movie. And we went to his house. Remember that, Tony? We went to his house when he was, like, pulling his hair out because he was like, oh, I'm going to get murdered for making this film. People are going to hate me because I'm making a film about Moana. But I'm making it for my child, who at that stage was 3 years old and just loved the Disney stories, like most of our kids do. So, you know,
that's the thing. Yeah. Like the kids, even if they haven't seen like Frozen, they still they know about it. They talk about it, and they want the hats and the t-shirts and everything. Even if they haven't seen the movie, and when they see, so yeah, my sister has a girl of age 3 years old, and she's singing the songs now.
Before we decided to program that film, I spoke to our Hawaiian filmmakers that are coming over to Māori Land, and I said, look, the young people want to screen Moana. I haven't seen the movie, but before I even go there, what are your thoughts as native Hawaiian people? And it was really interesting because Kioni came straight back and said, you know, I've been on the Hokulea, which is a double-hulled ocean voyaging canoe. My children, one is nine, and my boy is nine and my girl is seven, they have been brought up on that canoe, that waka. They've been going to sea for, you know, since they were tiny. When my boy saw Moana, he came home and he said, Dad, I want to be a navigator. And my little girl hasn't stopped dancing around the room since that movie came out because she is Moana in her eyes. Now, if she said, I don't care about anything, if that gives my kids a sense of who they are as native Hawaiian people against this massive David and Goliath kind of, you know, pressure they have in Hawaii, then I'm all for screening that film and kind of, you know, sharing the magic. Mm-hmm. And I think it is about that in ways. Let's remember that the reason we tell stories, the reason we love film is because we see the magic. And we see the layers. Mm-hmm. We see the layers. What people see in that movie, any movie that has a native input, an indigenous input, is they see that film will talk to us in a different way than other audiences. You know, that's what it is. We see beyond, you know, the obvious, I guess.
Beyond the curtains.
Yeah. Beyond the curtains, love it.
Sokar Shoka.
We are at a time in our filmmaking growth where we do have the technology, we do have the tools, and if we can combine the mōhio, the knowledge, our collective knowledge, we can start telling Frozen, you know, or any of that big stuff. And I don't mean Frozen I mean the enormity of a film like that.
I think one of the things that excites me too is that, I mean, there must have been a point in film history when someone invented the action film, noir, the horror film, or whatever. And so I just see this growth of film which is identifiably indigenous. Whether that becomes called, I don't know, fourth world cinema, native cinema, I'm not sure. But I'm salivating, I guess, at the thought of this new body of film that will be delicious in its diversity and profound in its weight. And we see this thing growing before our very eyes. And one of the most beautiful things that I think that we see in Māori Land, and even today at Skubmakovit, with the emphasis on the children, is that we're here not just to make films or show films to ourselves. We're here too to train our young people. Whether it's using a film like Moana or Frozen or Disney to open their eyes, that's all good. But as long as we foster this new generation of storytellers, and particularly those of our young people who have been fortunate enough to grow up knowing their own language from whatever nation they come, this is our duty.
And here's a challenge. If I think that if you're going to want to pick up the native slam, let's make a feature film together. Just saying.
That could be an idea.
I mean, making films is such hard work if you follow the normal process of getting your script, finding the funding, getting the casting, getting buy-in from distributors, sales agents. It's such difficult, hard work. And so we're really interested in not just making films, but also figuring out new ways to create the resources to make films, new means of distribution. Yeah. I have a dream, in a sense, that with Māori Land, we are a festival like Skudmakovit that is linked with its community. We don't have a film theatre in Otaki, our home, and so rather than our families having to travel down to Wellington, spend all the money on petrol, pay outrageous prices to go and see a film, spend all the money on McDonald's or lollies at half time, we should be able to, with the technology of today, put projectors and speakers in any kind of gathering space. And Indigenous peoples all over the world have places where we gather. It might be a longhouse, it might be a marae, it might be a community centre, but it's a place where our people gather. And where the people gather is a chance for us to be able to share in big screen stories, because the technology makes it absolutely viable. It doesn't cost much to get a projector these days or a sound system. We can bring the movies to the people rather than expect the people to go to where the movies are.
Yeah. Nā Yorma. So, big expectations. What do you think? Are people coming to Inari to watch the films?
I hope so, because the weather shouldn't be a problem now, because it's it's very hot weather here in Inari.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hot. Plus, yeah.
Plus degrees.
Yeah. So that should be a problem. And our program is quite strong now, because the Maoris make a very, very strong film. So I had really difficulties to pick up something from there, because there's so much to take.
I have to say, it was a pleasure. It was very nice to get to know you, Tainu Stevens and Libby Hakaraya. And kiitu Jorma Lehtola. I'm going to wish you all the best to this weekend, and we are very sorry that you can't experience the minus 30.
Oh, I know. So we'll have to come back next year.
But all the people who are coming here now to Inari, so remember, there's a lot of Maori stuff going on.
and many Maoris in the band.
Yeah.
I think it's 8 of them. they never walk alone.
It's a friendly invasion, bro.